Turn, if you will, in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11. We are continuing our series on Behold Your God. And we're going to take a broad look at Matthew chapter 11 and focus at the end on the last couple of verses. Even as Dr. Benson mentioned, I've had the opportunity to both be in Christian education and in pastoral ministry. And one of the privileges of that comes with premarital counseling. And so hanging out with college students, I've done about 100 or so different premarital counseling contexts. To my knowledge, none of them at meeting and speed dating. Okay, just FYI, so lower your expectations right now. Let me give you one scenario, and then I'll get your input afterwards. I was interacting with a couple, and we'll just call them Bob and Bethany. And it was the very first session. The couple had dated for about 2 years. And so I asked them, I said, how well do you know one another? And their response was, man, we know one another just so well. We've been dating for 2 years. And I knew both of them and had a basic understanding of both of them. And so I asked a simple question. I said, what is it that you find to be very attractive about your fiancé? I mean, what are their strengths? What are the areas in which they complete you? Why do you need them? And I've done this enough to know that you always start with the girl, because she'll have something to say right away. And right away, Bethany stopped. She went, man, Bob is so smart. He's organized. He's disciplined. He's a strong leader. And she went on for a couple minutes, and he just kind of sat there and smiled. And after she was done, I actually turned to Bob, and I said, all right, Bob, what do you think? And he stared at me. Looked at her. She looked at him. She kind of smiled, and he just stared. And then he turned around and he looked at me and he said, I really can't think of anything. So I thought, okay, I'll give this guy a mulligan and I'll rephrase the question. And I said, why do you value her? What does she do well? And again, he looked at her. And he looked at me. He said, honestly, Pastor Brian, I just can't think of anything. I do everything better than she does. She actually needs me. I don't actually need her. Okay, now, I want you to imagine for a moment that that Bethany is your sister. Okay, so as Bethany is your sister, she walks out of that session, she comes to you, and she asks the simple question, what should I do? All right, we're going to make this easy. We're going to make this multiple choice. Here are your three options. Okay? A, you can respond to Bethany simply by saying, you are so lucky that Bob is such a stud of a fiancé. I mean, that guy is an absolute keeper, and you should be thankful. All right? That's A. B, Bob may be stuck on himself a little bit, but he just needs some work. But he is worth the effort. Okay? And then C, drop the bum and run as fast as you can the other way. Okay, now, you guys are all like, give me my certification in biblical counseling. All right, let's do this in a democratic fashion, all right? How many of you would say, A, you are so lucky that Bob is such a stud of a fiancé? How many would say, A? Okay, guys, look around. All right, if you are like Bob, these are your options that you see. Okay, the answer is zero. All right, how many would say B? He's a work in progress, and so give him a chance. All right, how many would say C? Drop the bum and run as fast as you can the other way. Okay, you guys are harsh, by the way. Why did you answer it that way? You answered it that way. It's because you understand that intrinsically, every relationship is defined by particular components. And those components simply include knowledge and revelation. In other words, you know something about who they are. And you can communicate that. Not just that you can communicate it from an intellectual perspective, but you actually value it. You accept them. They have invited you into a relationship and you have responded with an affirmative, yes, I want to be in a relationship with you. Revelation and acceptance are absolutely necessary parts of a relationship, of any relationship. And Bob's problem was simply this. He had plenty of opportunities to get to know Bethany over the last 2 years, who was very actively seeking to love him. But he failed to know her, and he failed to affirm her in any way. And really, by doing so, what he was communicating to her is that he never loved her to begin with. And thus, 2 hours later, when Bethany took the ring off and slid it across my desk, most of you would have said, way to go, girl, because you understand that. All right, now, the relational principle is obvious. Negatively, let me put it negatively, if you snub the revelation of someone who is seeking a relationship with you, then you can expect rejection. Now, positively, if you desire a relationship with someone, then you will accept their revelation of themselves, and you will move toward their invitations. Okay, now that principle is true in every earthly relationship. We know that. But I will simply suggest for us this morning is that that principle is also true at a spiritual perspective. And really, Matthew chapter 11 is focusing on that very issue. What Matthew chapter 11 does is it answers particular questions for us. It answers the question of why is the revelation of God important? It answers the question of how did God reveal himself? And it answers the question of how we are supposed to respond to God's revelation. And really, the primary point of the entirety of the chapter is simply this. Your response to the revelation of God is the difference between condemnation and invitation. Now, again, we don't have time to look at the totality of the chapter, but let me give you a running start into where we're going. At the beginning of the chapter, John the Baptist finds himself in prison. And he's beginning to question the revelation of God. And so he simply sends his disciples to Christ and he says, are you who you said you were? And Christ's response to that is absolutely yes. Go tell John everything that you have seen. In other words, everything that has been revealed to you. Go tell John. And then from that, Christ actually moves into really a condemnation of people as a whole. He says, I have come to reveal who God is, and the congregation as a whole have basically said, dance when we ask you to dance, dirge when we ask you to dirge. Right? We want a God that we can play with, that can be a toy on a string, that will do what we desire them to do. And instead, you're a God who hangs out with sinners and with publicans. We don't like you. And then Christ moves into very specific instruction. The first thing he says is simply this, as it relates to his revelation. He says that revelation is important. Why? Because the fear of God's revelation is condemnation. I want us to look at this within the text. Look with me at verse 24. What Christ is doing is he's starting to move specifically into his condemnation of cities. And he says this, actually we'll pick it up in verse 20 when he says, then began he to upbraid the cities wherein most of his mighty works were done because they repented not. In other words, the places where he has revealed himself the most are the places that are receiving the condemnation. And what is the nature of the condemnation? Go all the way down now to verse 24, and he concludes this entire section by saying this, but I say unto you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee. What the Lord is doing is he's bringing together a correlation. Right? And this is one that we need to grasp here. He is saying that condemnation is not based upon the heinousness of one's sin, but condemnation is based upon the rejection of one's quantity of revelation. All right, what that means is simply this, is that the more revelation one receives, the greater condemnation they will receive if they reject it. Now, folks, that's important. That's particularly important for you and I. Hey, we're sitting in a place that through this semester, we're going through a study of the Psalms and a study of theology proper. So everything that we're going to be touching is an aspect of the revelation of God. Theologians speak in terms of various means of revelation. And we're actually going to be looking at every single one of them in the context of our study in Psalms. We have creation, Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows its handiwork. We see the fingerprints of God all throughout creation. We have the word of God. We see that further in Psalm 19. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. So within this book, God reveals himself. We go beyond that. We have the conscience. We're going to be studying Psalm 51. In Psalm 51, David says, "For I acknowledge my transgression, and my sin is ever before me." We have general revelation. Dr. Pettit spoke of that when he introduced this series. We have special revelation within the Word. We have the revelation of the moral will of God as communicated in our conscience. Psalm 51 speaks of that. Romans 2 speaks of that. Then even beyond that, we have the revelation of simply the acts of God, the providences of God. We see this in Psalm 78. Again, another psalm that we're going to study, where the instruction to fathers is simply this: we will not hide them. Speaking of the works of God, we will not hide them from our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he has done. Friends, I want you to capture this. As a student of Bob Jones University, you are being exposed by way of who God is in everything that you touch. You go into your core classes. You go into the Bible class, into school religion classes. And it doesn't matter what the class is. You see the handprint of God behind that. You capture an element of that revelation. And what that means for you and I is simply this, is the greater the quantity of revelation, the greater the potential for condemnation. Put this in just very simple terms, and very, very hard terms. Friends, if you're going through your education at Bob Jones University, and you reject the revelation of God, then your diploma will be like a stone of granite that is hung around your neck, and that will drive you to the deepest parts of condemnation and hellfire. And I don't say that to be overly dramatic. I say that because that's what the text says. Your life verse is Matthew 11:24. It will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee. Because the principle is clear. If you snub the revelation of God and you don't accept his invitation for a relationship, then God has every right to cut off that relationship. You have already made the choice. And the greater the revelation, the greater the condemnation. You've actually already declared that. Because almost every single one of you voted for Bethany to drop Bob. Basically, you've already agreed with God. If you're here this morning and you have not accepted the revelation of God, you should be shaking in your boots right now. You should be seeking help. Right? That's the first point. The first point is actually addressing the question of why is the revelation of God so important? We're going to be hearing multiple chapters about the revelation of God, and why is it so important? It's so important because your response to the revelation of God is the difference between condemnation and invitation. And the fear of God's revelation is simply condemnation. Now, some of you are going to stop right there and you're going to say, "All right, Brian, I do not want condemnation, and I have already initially accepted that invitation to knowing who God is. But how do I find him? I've been looking for him. Where is he most on display? I noted that theologians note five different ways that God is revealed. I gave you four of them. Let me give you the fifth one of them. All right, and it's actually, again, born out of the text. Look with me at verse 27. After the condemnation upon the cities, in verse 25 and 26, Jesus gives thanks to the Lord that not all are condemned, that some accept the revelation of God. And then he notes the specific venue in which that acceptance takes place. Verse 27, all things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. The second point that Christ is making is simply this, is that the fullness of God's revelation is bound within the incarnation. The fear of revelation is condemnation, but the fullness of revelation is in the incarnation. Remember the night right before Christ was crucified? And he's with the disciples in the upper room, and they're having this conversation, and John records it for us in John chapter 14. And it begins with familiar words. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, doubtless I will come again, and I will receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And immediately, the disciples started getting stirred, and Thomas asked a question, and the Lord responds by simply saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. And then Philip speaks up, and he simply says this, Lord, show us the Father, and it will suffice us. Just show us the Father. You remember Christ's response? This is actually verse 8 of John chapter 14, where he says, have I been so long with you that you do not know, Philip? He that has seen me has seen the Father. How sayest then, show me the Father? Can I simply say this? If you're here this morning and you say, I want to see the Father, I want to behold our God, then Christ's answer to that is simply this. Look on the Son. The Son is the fullest manifestation of the Father that God has ever given. He's the perfect manifestation of the Father. Creation falls short. The providence of God is not always completely clear. Right? The conscience of man can get twisted and can get tainted. The scriptures are limited just by our own understanding. But when we look at the Son, we see the fullness of the Father. And that's exactly what Christ said. Think in terms of even what Paul says, Colossians chapter 2, for in him, speaking of Jesus, dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Hebrews chapter 1, God hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, and by whom he made all of the world, and catch this, who being in the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person. And then Christ himself says in John chapter 10, I am the Father, are one. If you want to see the Father, then you just look at the Son. As Dr. Benson said, I've come back to Bob Jones. I actually graduated over 30 years ago. This is one of my first times back on campus, and I had to reacquaint myself with everything that was going on. And one of the joys is actually bouncing into old friends. And the nature of those conversations at times, I would be talking with someone, and I can remember one specific illustration where he simply said, do you remember Joe? Remember, he was tall and he had black hair. And I looked at him and I said, I don't think so. Joe was short and he had blonde hair. And my friend said, no, he was in Zeta Chi. And I said, no, he wasn't. He was in Sigma. And then he said, he was dating Susan. Remember Susan? Susan was from Michigan. I went, no, he wasn't. He was dating Stephanie. Stephanie was a redhead from California. And we were going back and forth, and finally he reached in his office and he pulled down a yearbook and he opened it up and he looked up Joe and he pointed to the picture and he said, that's Joe. I stopped and I went, oh, you meant Joe Rigg, not Joe Ryan. Because three pictures down is Joe Ryan. That's the guy I'm talking about. Sometimes we stop and we say, Lord, I just want to know who God is and I want to be able to see him clearly. And God's response to that is simply to point to the Bible and say, I have given you a perfect photo album. If you want to see the Father, then all you need to do is look at the Son. And when you see the Son, you will have seen the Father. I love this. I love the fact that God became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father. So the first question is a question of fear. It's a question of why the revelation of God is so important. Because what's hanging in the balance is invitation versus condemnation. The second question is a question of how do I see God? And the answer to that is in the incarnation. The fullness of God is revealed in the incarnation. But there's a third question. The third question is simply this. Sometimes we stop and we say, all right, I get that, but am I allowed to enter into that relationship? Look at me. I'm a sinner. I'm limited. And everything that I do, there's a day that I want to be invited into an invitation with God, into a relationship with God, and there's the next day where my heart is so prone to wonder. Why would God ever extend an invitation for a relationship with me? And now we get to the end of Matthew 11. In the end of Matthew 11, after Christ has gone through a condemnation of multiple people and a limitation of revelation just by incarnation, he offers these words, verse 28, very familiar. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Sometimes when we speak of theology proper, even as it was mentioned, that sounds so cold and stale. It sounds like a theology book that is on the desk of a professor in the school of religion. And we go, that is what they do. And what I love about what Christ does here is after walking through a totality of teaching on the revelation of God, he ends it with an invitation. And it's not an invitation to those that are intellectually astute. Matter of fact, earlier in the passages, he actually says the arrogant will not be invited. The invitation is for children. Do you fall in that category? Simple. The invitation is for those with needs. What do we learn about the revelation of God? What do we learn about the revelation of Jesus even within this passage? There's four things that we learn even within these verses. Let's just note them quickly. Number one, we know about Jesus by who he extends the invitation to. We know about Jesus by who he extends the invitation to. Sometimes you'll hear someone ask a question, if you could invite four people for a dinner party, who would you invite? And based upon who they name, that tells you a lot about that individual, who they want to spend time with. So look at who Christ is inviting here. He stops and he says, those of you that are weary, those of you that are burdened. Right? Weary communicates the idea of one who has labored all day long. And then burdened is the passive side of weariness. You've labored all day long and you don't feel like you can take the next step. That's who Christ is inviting into a relationship. Do you potentially fit that category? Burdened with the weight of sin, burdened with the trials of this life, burdened with the weight of this world, and you stop and you say, who would ever invite me? And the answer is Christ. Second thing we learn is simply this. We know about Jesus here by his own self-description. Catch the contrast here. The very son who just condemned the arrogant now is turning to the weary, and he's simply saying, I am meek and lowly. Sometimes when we read this passage, we see a God who is angry because of condemnation. And yet a true revelation of the Son is not a God of condemnation, but a God of lowliness and love. And he simply says, come, spend time with me. None of us wants to spend time with the arrogant person. But to spend time with the lowly Savior, who is God. Third thing we learn is simply this. We know about Jesus by the promise that he makes. And what's the promise he makes? The promise is that he's going to exchange your weariness for rest. And within this passage, I think the rest that's being spoken of here is actually the knowledge of God. When you embrace the invitation, you understand who God is, and that brings rest to your soul. But obviously, this is not just a temporary rest. This is a rest that extends for all of eternity as we enjoy the presence of God and, again, the fullness of his revelation. And finally, we learn about Jesus by the request that he extends. Exchange your heavy load for my light and easy yoke. It's interesting. He says, learn of me. The word learn, or the word learn there is actually, it's out of the word family in which the word disciple comes. Some would ask the question, is this an invitation for salvation or is this an invitation for discipleship? And the answer is what? Yes. Those two are never separated within the context of the gospel. What do we learn? Just three quick lessons. If you have not responded to the revelation of God, can I simply say, don't wait. Hell is at hand. There's a solemnity to this passage, and we need to feel the weight of it. Number two, if you desire to see the Father, look at the revelation of the Son, and in him, behold your God. And finally, number three, if you're not sure he wants to meet you, respond to his invitation. Come to me. Come to me. Learn of me. I'll exchange your weight for my light yoke. May we see our God and may we behold him. Father, thank you for your revelation in the Son. Thank you for the invitation that we can respond to. May we do so on a daily basis. In your name, amen.